Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. And as we often do when we play the Browns, when the Ravens play the Browns, we have Jake Burns from Browns Film Breakdown. Jake, how you doing?
Ken, we're good, man. We're surviving. It is a football. Okay, let me put it this way. From a football perspective, I'm miserable, but life is good. Put it that
it's
way.
Good.
There we go.
Love to hear that. So the Browns just coming off a loss to the Jets, which is, you know, unfortunate, but might have some positive implications from a draft pick perspective.
Yeah, that's the spot you don't want to be in. And I know your fan base is absolutely not familiar with this, but we have luckily avoided this plague for a while in terms of like a year over year dealing with this. It's not a fun thing to cover a football team, especially from an X and O's perspective, mm-hmm. when they're season is over by November 10th area. You know what I mean? That's just 2 months of, you know, then it just turns into like conjecture and looking at draft prospects and not caring about games. It's just not a, it's not a healthy NFL place to be. We were hoping to deal with it for 1 year and come out and be better this year, but it appears that this is going in the place of, like you said, where you're, you know, you're kind of actively rooting against your team winning, which isn't fun, but you need it because ultimately it's going to lead to more opportunity, not just giving you the best quarterback, but giving you the opportunity to maneuver in ways like we saw them do last year, where they make a trade around the Travis Hunter situation to get more capital, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not fun from that perspective. There's a lot of fun pieces we can talk about, but yeah, the Jets loss is like, it's enraging. It's frustrating. I think that the stat I would share with you is teams who held opponents under 170 yards and didn't turn the football over one time were 225-0. Until Sunday, the Browns decided to give up a kick return, and then after punting on their own end, a punt return in a matter of 3 minutes of game time. So that will do you in when it matters most on an NFL schedule. So, yeah, man, we're in a rough spot over here, Ken, but we are, you know, trudging forward.
Now, let's talk about a couple of things that I know people want to talk about. They ran the ball pretty effectively in this game, but I did notice Gabriel took 6 sacks in the game. Didn't look like he had a terrible game throwing the ball, a couple of interceptions, no touchdowns. Maybe it was worse than that really looked.
Yeah, he ended up statistically, it's kind of fine. Like you said, he throws for like 170, and it wasn't a great day weather-wise. It was pretty rainy and nasty there in New York and all of that, and that's NFL football for the most part, you know, until Cleveland decides to throw a dome up in the division of no domes. But there's, you know, there was ample opportunity. Could have been a bigger day. A lot of stuff left on the field. Ends up throwing a couple touchdowns, which is fine, right? And there were some turnover-worthy plays that didn't result in interceptions. But, you know, Ken, he's a backup at best, and he's a third-round pick, a 94th pick in the draft, being asked to play in a situation that doesn't elevate the quarterback, right? It's a situation where they're asking a quarterback to do a lot, and it's NFL history will tell you guys, even guys taken in the second round, asking them to do a lot is a lot to ask of these very flawed prospects. And the Browns are living with a flawed quarterback and some other flawed elements we can talk about, but he's just, I don't want to sound crass, because it's just like he's just kind of unremarkable in every way. Like, he's just very league average, like below average right now. He can get to average, I think, as he gets more NFL exposure. And I think he's got a chance to be a nice backup. But this is also like the 94th pick in the draft, not a nothing burger pick. So it's like, it's hard to feel great about it right now. But we don't have to go too deep in the weeds. He's not doing anything at a high level. He's not, the arm talent's not remarkable to make up for the slow processing, the middle of the field stuff, because at times he's blocked out from seeing things and he's sort of hunting windows, is what I call it for shorter quarterbacks. He doesn't see it in time or at all. And he's not as accurate as I really thought he would be, Ken. So if you're not really doing the things a smaller quarterback needs to do to elevate his game, you get a lot of the results here where at times pockets overwhelm him, right? Like, just bodies are closed down, and it's not even so much that he's taking these egregious sacks. I just think that like the game's moving fast, and at times he's swarmed under because the Browns offensive line also isn't very good anymore. And it lends to some really unhealthy possessions.
All right. Older, offensive line we'll get to in a few minutes. But is there any chance we see Sanders this game?
It's a mystifying topic. We have no indication. Like, there's trying to be concise on the topic of we talk about it way too much. An unhealthy amount of banter on this on our side. But like, he's the second quarterback, which isn't nothing because you're one play away. But it was really like the Joe Flacco trade, which ticked off the entire division, in particular Pittsburgh at the time, like put them in a spot where they had to make him the second quarterback. And even that the time that they did make him the second quarterback, it was like, well, we want to see him practice this week and then we'll make that call, because they had brought around Bailey Zappe again this year to be that practice squad type. I don't know what to think, Ken. I really don't, in terms of like, is this guy like out in left field picking Daniel? Let me put it this way. And I always try to remember that not every fan base remembers everything about other teams' situations, especially one that's like a decade ago. But it was pretty popular in NFL situation. The Browns started 7-4 in 2014. Okay. Nice start. Brian Hoyer, the OC, was a young guy at the time. Everybody kind of liked, but they're unsure about this guy named Kyle Shanahan. Maybe he's going to be good. We'll see. They also had a quarterback coach. Actually, I think he was a wide receiver coach, Mike McDaniel. Guys who've gone on to find some success. They were running a pretty good offense that year. Had a great start. Were running it really well. Wide zone stuff hadn't really been figured out that well by the league at that point. They got to 7-4, topped the division, and then they lost two in a row. And Brian Hoyer was their quarterback at the time. Hometown kid. Was struggling. He was a problem for them moving the football. He threw for like 120 yards against the Colts. They fell to 7-6. And then there was this mounting pressure to play a young guy named Johnny Manziel.
Football.
Yes. It was like, what people were trying to figure out, why can't he play? What's the problem? Why won't they? Like, he's got to be better than this. And then you played him against the Bengals and he threw for like 50 yards. And then we figured out, oh, he stinks. So yeah. It's not even like, I'm not saying Shador has any of the personal habits of Johnny Manziel that have come to light over the years, but like, I go back to this. I've said it on my pod a lot. There was a time where Mike Zimmer, a few years back at the end of a football season, was talking to the press and they're like, I think Kirk was hurt at the end of the year or something. And they're like, hey, what do you think about seeing Kellen Mond? You know? And he was like, I see him every day. And it was like, this guy stinks. I'm not playing him. And like the Browns, particularly Kevin Stefanski, doesn't ever do that to players. He doesn't ever throw them under the bus. He doesn't ever do. But it feels like you have to go one of two ways. You're either like a person who thinks the Browns are trying to purposefully hold him back, air quotes on this, like prove themselves right about Dylan Gabriel and continue to hold Shador back. Or you're of the belief of like, they're watching him every day. And they're deeming he can't do it. So I tend to root myself in the most reality-based thing I think that's the most feasible here, which is that they haven't seen enough from him to play him yet. There is a world. Now, to me, it would be irresponsible, Ken, because this isn't the same universe as they were in 2014. They were competitive. Some guys in there, like they were, you know, you're 7-4 in the NFL. You're not nothing. They obviously weren't good enough, but like, this is a situation where you spend a third and a fifth on rookies ahead of a year where they have enough capital to really go get a meaningful quarterback. It would be irresponsible not to play Shador this year. It would be a waste of a pick because you did move up in the fifth round to go get him. So it would be, to me, slightly irresponsible to not see some of what you have in him by the end of the season in a very wasted season where you clearly don't mind losing. So like, I think that there's in my opinion, You know, the only thing that would stop Shador from getting on the field at all this year is if Dylan is just really good and he's riding a heater and he's playing impressive football. We can't take him off the field. And that's just not the case. So I don't think it's this game. It's certainly possible it's Vegas. If Dylan really struggles in this one, they go out to Vegas, very controlled environment out there. Not a very good football team for the Raiders, but there's other opportunities coming. They play the Titans still at home. And there's some other ones, but yeah, I mean, I think he's going to play. I don't think we have any indication it's right now or even next week, but I just would think at some point they will play him.
Yeah, the Ravens have a similar situation at guard right now, as you may or may not be aware, but both guards are kind of being beaten like the unwanted dog by the Ravens fan base. And honestly, yeah. Neither of them is all that bad. I mean, they're neither of them is playing great, but Falele is like 17th out of 57 guards and is a pass blocker at least, even though he looks like a oaf on the field. And you know, they're asking the question: can these other guys, Bullock and Cleveland and Emory Jones, who was drafted and had some injuries he's working through, and it, can they be worse? And my answer to that is immediately, of course they can be worse. Yes. You know, there's a lot of room below this in terms of, yeah, of what could be. And, I, you know, based on Gabriel's last game, it's not great to take six sacks, and you're watching more of, you know, how much difficulty he's having struggling in the pocket and whatnot. But there's a whole lot of below what Dylan Gabriel has. What I'm hearing from you is that seeing what you have with Sanders is very important by the end of the year. And then you maybe know in both cases what you have, and you can go ahead and make your number one pick.
For sure. And like, people are very, you don't need to be told this, but the NFL is full of hyperbole, and like,
yep,
it'll be Dylan Gabriel's the worst quarterback I've ever seen. I was like, you guys, did you guys watch Dorian Thompson Robinson last? Were we in the same universe when that was happening? Like, obviously Dylan's got deficiencies here, but he's a rookie, and he's like, again, not many rookies who are non first round guys who aren't the unicorns that we know, right? The Russells, the Dacks, those types come into, and those guys, even all of those guys who found success by playing early, went into either offenses or team constructed situations, such as that Seattle defense that was elevating everybody. Like, they were not asked to, they were meant to be cogs, not the entire thing driving. So I just am like, Dylan, and really when Shador plays too, this is the case for most late round picks. It's like, you're always fighting an uphill battle to find consistency in the league. And I think that's the case. But what I go back to more than anything, Ken, is like, the Browns are the most desperate team in the universe to find sustainability at quarterback. They've proven it over and over again. We just need to look at the decision they made in 2022, right? Mm-hmm. If you were to say that they're watching him in practice light the world on fire, and they said internally, hey, we can't play him, we just can't do it because we want to see if it would take like goofy levels of conspiracy theory brain to think that. I think that they're not seeing what they need to see from him in practice yet and in the meeting rooms. And maybe that comes in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Who am I to say? I don't know. Maybe Dylan plays so poorly, he plays himself off the field. But I do think it's like, if you want to believe that the team that's the most desperate to solve this position in the NFL has an answer right in front of them, playing, lighting the world on fire in practice, and they don't want to play him and they don't want to solve this, good luck with that, because that's just like, it's just lunacy to me.
That's a great point. And by the way, Ravens fans, take something from that in terms of the Ravens guard situation. If you don't think the Ravens are desperate to solve their guard situation and you're not taking into account what Jake is saying, I think it's pretty foolish. Talk about the five major rookies on the team, because the Browns drafted a lot of talent and it looked pretty good early on, at least. How are they doing?
Yeah, Carson Swesson. Well, let's go one by one. So Mason Graham is, and you know this too, is like playing the hardest position to come in and play out quickly and effectively. And he's playing a ton. He's playing like, I don't have it in front of me PFF wise, but he plays like the 10th most snaps of any defensive tackle in the entire NFL. Wow. He plays a ton of snaps, and he's not, I wouldn't say he's put together like a ton of flashes of dominance, but he's just very steady. Like, they want him to do specific things, and he usually can get there. He can usually hold down a gap. He can usually get some vertical disc, like placement of a concept in his direction, but he's not doing anything that like would wow you or is going to win him awards. So he's been, I would say, consistently fine, which is hard to be like, that's the fifth overall pick, he should be better.
This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
But in a position that's hard to quantify success,
yeah.
I do think he's playing good football.
He's playing 43 snaps per game, folks, by the way. So that's a very high total for a rotational position like he plays on the interior defensive line.
Yeah, he plays a lot. I thought he would play a lot because of the investment in him and what they thought of him as an endurance-based player at a position that's hard to find that. But even for me, it's been like, that's a lot of snaps. So There are going to be lulls. There are going to be times where he's overwhelmed. He's facing gigantic human beings in a way he didn't face in the Big Ten all the time. And he's playing more snaps than he did at Michigan. And now he's in a 17 game grind, which is different. So he's been good enough to make me feel like he could, like, all I want to see with young defensive tackles in most difficult positions, like, show me how you're going to win consistently, like, in the future. And there's enough flashes of what he does with some technique things that I like. And I think he'll get better, and I think he'll continue to morph his body a little bit to handle that. So he's been good. Carson Schlesinger leads the NFL's Rookie of the Year defensive honors betting odds right now. He's a phenomenal football player, man. Like, really, really, to step in the league day one, play Mike, handle the green dot duties, and play sideline to sideline fast. Very good. They've loved everything they've gotten out of him. He had a gnarly high ankle sprain in the Patriots game before their week 9 bye. And was like, this is usually a 4 to 6 week injury. He played last week and he was really good. So I don't know how he healed that quickly from what they thought was in that. He was out in a walking boot after that game in New England, but he played and he's really good and he has no ankle issues. And he's just the hit on that pick. He's really good. Quinshon Judkins.
Did he win the rookie of the month, defensive rookie of the month?
I don't think he did. I don't think he's won it yet. I think it went to somebody else. I know that Buchanan. Yeah. So I think he's not won that individual award yet, but
it's coming.
God, he's another guy. He's on the field every snap and doing so many, like, checks and moving people, and like the amount of pressure they're putting on him right away. I'm pretty stunned he's handling it as well as he is. So it's a kudos to him. He's just going to be a nice player. I don't know if he's ever going to be, you know, I don't think he's got the rare athleticism to be a Fred Warner type or that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know that that's ever in the cards, but like, can he be an Aldi version of like Luke Kuechly? Like, that feels like the place he can go. He's a very smart football player who's just like always putting himself in the best possible position in every snap. So he's had a nice run. Quinshon Judkins is a good football player, man. Everything you want a guy in between the tackles, cuts, processing, second level vision. He's just going to be good. I don't know if he's ever going to be like Bijan Robinson because he doesn't catch the football as much out of the backfield. I don't think he's going to be that type of back, but he's got like a similar vibe to Nick Chubb, where he's going to be a really good ball carrier and blocker. And he's showing that he's getting better. He's a good player. So those are the three big picks. Harold Fannin can be among the best rookie tight ends. He doesn't block as well because, again, you're going from Bowling Green to the NFL and you're trying to block like grown men defensive ends. And he struggled to block well. And they've asked a lot of him lining up in the fullback spot, lining up in the slot, lining up in the wing, and crack blocking and kickouts and Y counters. And I mean, they're asking him to do a lot and he's overwhelmed by that at times, but the pass catching stuff comes so organically to him that he's such a nice weapon. A quick little anecdote on the rookies. The Browns have 200 in the offensive touches by rookies this year. That's the most through 9 games since, like, I think I have it in front of me, 26 years. I think it's,
wow.
Yeah,
so who would that have been in
99? Most through 9 games in 26 years, the second most through 9 games in the Super Bowl era behind the expansion Bengals in 68. So I don't know who that would have been in 99. Maybe their own team in 99, to be honest. I don't know. Yeah. It's possible. But yeah, it is a very dense rookie-led group that is since Dillon's took over, they don't target receivers as much as they were targeting receivers with Joe Flacco. So that's different from the first time we saw you guys. Now it's very much Dillon's like keeping everything inside the numbers. And like that leads to a lot of tight end throws, quick throws. So Njoku and Fannin are the most popular targets. And then obviously they get Dillon Sampson a little bit involved and Judkins gets his touches and stuff too. So, but boy, Ken, it's a bad offense right now. It's not fun to watch, but Tommy Rees took over as the play caller last week. And there were some encouraging steps of scheming things that were doing one thing leading to another, like real football formula thinking that Kevin has been struggling with. So there is a little encouragement there.
I do want to toss out two things. First of all, kind of cogitate on whether Kevin Stefanski is near the end of his role in Cleveland, but also tell me one player on each side of the ball you think matches up well against the Ravens in this game.
Yeah, I think I'm eager to see if Carson matches up well, because I thought the Browns did really well stopping Derek the first time and bottled him up well, but Lamar did what Lamar does and you know, he ended up producing really well. So I do think I'm interested to see. They did some very fun wrinkles in the pass game with their guard misdirection. Browns are heavy guard read linebackers. They don't really see through guards into the backfield. So they did a lot of influence things moving guards. So I'm fascinated to see if they go that route again, because they got Carson a few times moving guards opposite of the intention of the concept. So I think Carson is playing better than he was early in the year. So I'm fascinated to see that one, obviously. And then obviously Grant Delpit's playing really good ball too. He, as far as like safeties who are in the box, and I know Kyle's done more of that this year than ever, but like Grant is as good as it gets, man. It's stepping up and playing the run from the safety position. So I think those two are two I'm very intrigued by matching up. But if you're talking about your guards are struggling, I mean, Mason played a pretty good game the first time. They had three pressures and a TFL or two. So if you know, if the key matchup's probably Malik Collins, who's still playing really, really good football, I'm stunned they didn't trade him. Like, absolutely flabbergasted. Some team didn't, like the Bills, swoop in and take him for like a fourth or a third. I couldn't believe that. So, you know, Malik's playing well. It's probably the guards and DTs. If the Browns can get pressure through the guards, that's probably a place that that the Ravens offense would feel a little uncomfortable. On the offensive side, I mean, it probably comes down to just, can you keep Judkins bottled up? The debut game was when his first NFL game was there in Baltimore. He's more comfortable now. So it's probably like, you know, I think the Patriots held him to like 9 carries for 19 yards, and it was just made the Browns offense really miserable trying to figure out other ways to go. So I would imagine if I'm Baltimore, it's I'm figuring out everything I need to do to bottle this up, and then we'll go and work around it from there. So it's like two guys that the Browns want to get moving against the Ravens would be Fannin and obviously Quinshon. So to your second question, I think it's it's mystifying, man. Like Paul D. Podesta, who's been a name that your folks should know.
Yep.
Moneyball, huge in the baseball analytics world, joined Cleveland in 2017 as the head of chief strategy officer, and has been around the organization through the Sashi Brown years and then all the way into this era we're in. And he just left. He just took off for Colorado to run their baseball operations. And he was asked the question about like the Deshaun Watson trade, and he basically said that some people agree, not everybody's always going to agree on everything, but we all own it. There are people that are on one of two sides. Either the Browns made a blood pact here and this trade has hindered them so much that they're going to give these guys another year, a chance to pick their quarterback, give them one more year and figure it out. Or you're like me, and I think that the messaging is missing, and I think that the player's impact is not the way it was for him at one time. And I think that if like he's passing off play calling 2 straight years, and they're going to probably go 6-27 over 6-26. My math's probably off on that, but 3 wins in 2 straight seasons. They could probably get a third win before the end of the year. Coaches in the middle of a tenure don't really survive that. There's some evidence things that I looked at on my show with like Marvin Lewis had a down year, but then they like went to the playoffs. He had like a couple really ugly years before they hit the AJ Green, Andy Dalton draft and really started to be consistent. There's some Jeff Fisher stuff in there too, that a couple years. And there was one other really good example in the modern, a modern era, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. But this is just, it's rare to be this bad 2 straight years and people keep their jobs. So you're of the belief one of two things: they're gone at the end of the year, and I think it's justifiable, because I do think that they have set themselves with some culture-based broken habits that have slid into this that I don't think Kevin has done enough to rectify in a meaningful way. Like, I don't, my biggest issue with Kevin is I don't think he can adapt his leadership style for what a team needs. My guys need to have a fire lit under them. My guys need to have, you know, put the armor. I don't feel like he's ever been good enough at that. But you can stomach a lot if your play caller's one of those dudes. And he's not. He's the Browns have since 2022, really tracing it back to 21, the league's lowest EPA across the entire stretch. And since 23, the start of 23, when Watson really got a chance to start a season, it is dead last by a wide margin. It has just been really putrid offenses. And not only, like I said, is there this like wins loss angle, like if you dig into the deeper data, that doesn't favor him. And then you dig into like two straight years mid-season giving up play calling. None of those things feel good. So if you're keeping him, it's because they were guaranteed that this was a tanking year and you can pick your guys and we'll sort of evaluate when you pick your quarterback. And that's the world we're living in, guessing, trying to figure out, Ken. And it's not fun. It's one of my least favorite things to do in this analysis world of why did they make this decision? What does it mean? What is that? It's so, ugh, it's just the worst thing to be doing. So
is it also a case where everybody wants to talk about that fresh, like the next day after you feel like you've already had two shows on this week?
We'll be in the middle of a pod. There's two things that we keep having to talk about. Why isn't Shador playing? And I'll be like, why are we talking about this again? I don't know. And we'll never know until we get the tell all from somebody years later. The same thing with like trying to figure out who to blame for the Watson trade and who to blame for some of these other decisions. And it's like, we just won't know. So, I mean, I really have no, as I sit here November 12th, I don't know if they're going to keep him or not. I think there's very fair arguments on both sides. I understand wanting to be consistent in a division full of consistency at those positions. But at the same time, when you really put the box together of like, what do they do well? What do they not do well? I mean, he's on his second defensive coordinator, his third offensive coordinator, his second special teams coordinator. And like, what's the common denominator here? Yep. Is he got to eventually ask? I don't think it's that Kevin can't coach. I do think he can find maybe another opportunity somewhere. And maybe he figures out how to handle the play calling and that stuff in a different way with somebody else calling it. And he gets a better CEO opportunity and it works. I don't know. But what I do know is what's going on here is unacceptable. It's not healthy, and they're in a real difficult spot with a fan base who's fed up, who is, you're trying to sell future PSLs for a new stadium and raising prices. And it's just, it's not a healthy environment right now.
I we need to have a talk about that sometime during the off season, but Jake, always appreciate talking football with you, however brief the opportunity is, but thanks so much for joining me. Tell folks where they can find your work.
Yeah. So if you want to just stay up on social with somebody covering the Browns, I'm at @Jake_Burns18. And then at Browns Film BDN is the film based account that we run that's on our site. But yeah, just BrownsFilmBreakdown.com and trying to build out a way to view football through as much film analysis as we possibly can. But when you're covering the Browns, you kind of got to get into this stuff too, which is not always the most fun, but we try to make the best of it.
All right. Thanks so much. Thanks to the listeners as well. As always, whatever you want to do to promote the show is great. A 5-star 50-word review. Please go have at it. Like and subscribe on YouTube or tell that one person you know about this show and how much they'd like it. Jake, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.